Hebrews were not taught reincarnation. Hindus are taught reincarnation. And Satan says, he was the one that says you will never die. There's always all kinds of pagan religions where people never really die. But Jesus Christ was coming to show people that he was the Messiah. He was the Mashiach. And he's been healing people. He's been speaking with the Pharisees and putting them in their place. He could see that into his spiritual realm where other people could not. He fed the 5,000. He fed the 4,000 and plus. He did all these things. And he sat around with his disciples and he goes, okay, guys, you know, here I am. I'm running for the Christ and trying to get people's attention to show them that I am the Lamb. Who do people say that I am? And remember that if it was just something that was idiotic, the disciples would never repeat it. And he goes, who they say I am? One says you're Isaiah. One says you're John the Baptist. And he goes, time out. John the Baptist? My cousin? Who just lost his head? Yeah, they believe that's... What does that tell us about even the Hebrews during Jesus Christ's time? They were confused. And what did he do? He taught the word. They weren't taught the word. What a lot of Christians don't know is the Hebrews weren't taught the word. They were taught oral traditions and the traditions that don't eat with unwashed hands and all the rest of these things. So when Christ came and he started teaching the word, the religious people got really upset. Go, time out. You can't say that. You can't do that. The religious people are always getting upset. But the objective is this. When Christ comes back, you will not be on your knees in front of a committee of religious people. No. You'll be on your knees in front of Jesus Christ. And that what you did, if you read your textbook, if you study for the final exam, the exam won't be the salvation necessarily, but it's what did you do with the life that I gave you? Were you a good steward? Did you give me back your life? How much of your life did you dedicate to me and my Father? And you'll be in front of them. And the things that you did do that were obedient to the word, you'll get to keep them through the fire. Relationships and compromise and stuff like that, you're not going to lose your salvation, but they're going to burn up. It's okay. But which exam are you studying for? To blend in with your peers? Because the disciples, they had to leave their peers. And what do you think they were feeling? Golly, I'm kind of losing a lot of friends here. Jesus Christ, you or Yahushua Mashiach, you're really upset a lot of religious people. You keep speaking these things. And what did they do? Go, I could follow. And Jesus Christ in John 6, verse 66. 666, remember that. He kept speaking whatever our Father told him to speak, and guess what happened? Well, when he's feeding them, everybody's coming around. And one time they even came to him on the other side of the lake. He goes, don't come to me and act like you're wanting to follow me. You want free lunches. This isn't the Lord's diner. We don't just give free lunches. And so, anyways... In John 6:66, when he started speaking the word, people started separating. The word holy means to separate. Mm-hmm. And our Father in 1 Peter says, holy I am, holy shall you be. We should be separating ourselves, not with our mom or our dad or our husband or our wife, but each day with Jesus Christ, our Lord and our Savior, or Yahushua Mashiach, and our Heavenly Father Yahweh, to say, what do you say? Where do you want to go today? And guess what will happen? Is that they will meet all your needs. And Matthew 6:33 says, seek ye first their kingdom, and then all the rest of the stuff's going to be taken care of. Maybe you're a little concerned about your children. You know, I can't seek Jesus Christ first. I'm not going to say that out loud, but I got too many kids running around. He'll take care of your kids. He'll take care of your mortgage. He'll take care of your health. He'll take care of your protection. I love it, because in the Word, Moses, it was so neat. Jesus Christ fed 5,000, not including men, women, and children. Okay? And people, their mind were blown. And he goes, wait a minute. My Father fed millions of people 3 meals a day for 40 years. This should not blow your mind. You mean he will feed us bread? Yes, I am the bread of life. I am the bread. And they came to him one time to Jesus Christ and go, you need to eat. He goes, you don't know where I get my food. Because man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word, every declaration that came out of Yahweh's mouth. And that's what Jesus Christ was reconciling the religious people back to him. What do I need? Jesus Christ spent 40 days in the wilderness. He didn't eat. How did he do that? And then when the adversary came to tempt him, he goes, man shall not live by bread alone. So you can go 40 days without eating. I don't think I've ever missed a meal in my life, to be honest with you. That's kind of embarrassing, but I don't think I ever really have. Moses went on Mount Sinai at night for 40 days without food and 40 days without water. Nobody's gone 40 days without water except for Moses. You go, what was he doing up there? Did he have a tent? No, not, he didn't have shelter. He didn't have a blow-up mattress. He didn't have a Coleman lantern. He didn't have a blanket. How did he survive? All he needed was Yahweh. And what's so wonderful about that, because Yahweh told Abraham, Abraham, come out of the walled city. He leaves the protection of the walled city. Then he tells Abraham later on, as they're in the desert, they're living in a tent. Here's him and his wife. You feel a little bit vulnerable living in a tent because somebody could just grab you, right? He told Abraham, I am your shield. I am your shield. I am your exceedingly great reward. So he's your food. He's your water. He's your shield, right? Okay. Then think about it. He wants to be everything. I heard a song once, and it was about a guy writing to a woman. He was trying to get her attention. He said, I want to be your favorite everything. Everything. And that's the relationship that Yahweh wants with us through Jesus Christ. The Garden of Eden is up to us to come to him and say, what do you want to talk about? What is it? And he sits there and he waits. There's compartments inside of our heart that maybe we don't like to talk to him about girls. I'm saying, well, that's a little uncomfortable. Or maybe you don't want to talk to him about this or this. But he goes, I would love to be invited to every little compartment of your heart. So the idea is, what compartments of your heart are you not letting him in there? And the idea is, don't feel guilty about it. Think about rooms and areas to improve and invite your Father into those things. But anyways, so the Telios ministry's got plenty of stuff with that. I have a ministry that's aside from this teaching and my Father's ministry, the Telios ministry. It's a weight room ministry that started, and it was really what got me moving it into teaching the Word. So now I go to the gym. I wear a shirt that says Body by Christ. I have scriptures on the back. I wear my tank tops, and I move heavy things. It's my passion. The catch to me in the gym is I got to witness to people. Because if I don't witness to people and I don't do my spiritual job, guess what? I don't have any strength. I got very little. And then if he does give me strength, like he did Samson, I get to move gigantic weights. And then if I get cocky and people go, how did you do it? Well, I'm tough. Guess what happens to my strength? It goes right back down, okay? Anyways, normally when I go into the gym, people are there waiting for me. It's really neat. But this last week, I was at the gym and I worked out 3 hours lifting my legs, and I was really excited about just spending that much time lifting legs and focusing. And then I got done lifting legs, and I went running for half an hour. And I was like, man, I just got so much time to exercise. And here I got my Body by Christ, and my shirt on, and I'm running. I'm running and speaking in tongues and praying for people. And as I get close to the end of my race, I got a word. It's called a word of knowledge. A word of knowledge means stop or go here. Why? Well, the why will be a word of wisdom, and it might come at a later date. But usually the word of wisdom, at least in my case, doesn't come until you obey the first part. You obey the word of knowledge. Tell me why. No, you give me faith and do what I say, and then I'll give you the rest. And so I'm like, I stop. I go, Walmart. I got to go home and take a shower. I've been working out for 5 hours, 4 hours. I got to go home and make my bed. I got to. Why would that? That's not Yahweh talking to me. I don't need to go to Walmart. Then the feeling didn't go away. It's sustained. Okay, I'm supposed to go to, okay, now I know I'm supposed to go to Walmart. Why? Where's the word of wisdom? And so I start clicking through the like a Rolodex. I don't need this. I don't even need milk. I don't like Walmart. I like Quick Trip. I like the gas station. That's where I go. Then I go, oh, I got it. I need pesticide for my tree because bugs are eating pesticide in my tree. And I went back. I was peaceful about it. I go, oh, that must be it. So I walk into Walmart, still wondering what I'm doing in there. I walk over to the lawn and garden area, and if you guys don't know this, it's the loneliest spot of all Walmart. There's nobody over there. Good luck getting help. You think electronics is bad, go to lawn and garden. Anyways, I'm walking around, I'm not sure what I'm doing in there, and I look, and here's all this pesticide. I finally find one for trees, and I read it, and it goes, it's for this bug, this bug, this bug, but I wasn't getting the light bulb as I looked at it. I wasn't getting the confirmation, and I'm still going, what am I doing here? As I'm standing there, a young guy, 18 years old, he's walking down the aisle, and he goes, hey, you can help me. And he looks at me, he starts walking towards me, and I thought this was very unusual because he's got a Walmart badge, and he's looking for some help. I'm the one who's supposed to be looking for help. You work here. Anyways, he walks up to me, and I'm holding this, and I just thought it'd be interesting. He goes, should I be taking whey protein, or should I be taking some of the synthetic protein? I mean, what do you think? And I look at my pesticide, I look at this guy, I'm like, here we go. People are always getting like free advice or what, but I was just, which is neat. I'm used to doing that in the gym. Anyway, it's like, well, you could take this protein, this protein. I said, what are you trying to do here? Well, I'm trying to do this and that. I go, wait, here's the rules of thumb. Take this amount, this amount, this amount, do it this time. But if you don't exercise, don't take protein. It's just going to turn into fat. He's like, okay, well, that sounds great. That's great. Well, I get down there and kind of give him a free personal training lesson. And then he goes, all right, thanks. And he gets ready to walk out. I'm like, whoa, time out, dude. Hey, I'm looking for pesticide. And I need it for a tree. He goes, oh, you don't want that. I'm like, oh, good. He's going to help me. He walks into the other aisle where it's garden pesticide, not for trees. And he points over. He goes, you got caterpillars. That's what you want. And I look at this guy. He doesn't know what I have. And I don't have caterpillars because there's no bugs on it. And he points to a little bottle for tomatoes. And I go, you're telling me that I need to buy tomato pesticide for my tree? He goes, yep. I said it back to him. I go, this stuff is for garden. I need something for trees. And he's looking at me like, oh, yeah, tomato, tomato. And I look at the guy, I'm going, what's going on here? And then finally, the light clicked on, the light bulb. And I look at this guy, and I go, are you serious about really transforming your body? He's like, yeah. Are you a Christian? Yeah. What's your name? Mark. I said, Mark, if you want to transform your body, let me tell you a little secret. I said, Mark, you're 18 years old. I asked him, he said he's 18. I said, you ever watch Iron Man? He goes, yeah. Pretty cool dude, right? Yeah. So what if I told you Iron Man lived inside you? His eyes got this big. I said, you ever seen The Incredible Hulk? Unstoppable? Yeah. Don't make me angry? Yeah. He lives inside you. Superman lives inside you. Batman, Spider-Man lives inside you. And all of a sudden, he looks like he's getting goosebumps. What are you talking about, he says. I go, the strongest man in the universe lives inside you. He is the solution. Protein, it's going to help and stuff. But if you want to transform yourself, you get on your knees and you talk to him and you talk to our Father and give him an offering. Say, this is something I really want. And I give my testimony how the weight room, I just wanted a bench press. That's all I wanted. I couldn't talk to anybody about a bench press. I was afraid they were going to laugh at me. But I finally talked to Jesus Christ and guess what he told me? He goes, no problem. Will you give me the credit? Yes, I'll give you the credit. Okay, good. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to get a bench press. And then I give him this testimony. I go, dude, and you know how it worked? I go, 3 months go by, guess what happened? He goes, what? I said, nothing, zero, nada happened because I didn't give him the credit. I said, you have to give him the credit before you even get it. He wants faith from you. So I give him this whole testimony, and this guy is soaking it up. His eyes are this big, and he sits there, and I look at him, I go, Mark, I think that I need to pray for you right now. And I reach out, and as I reach out for his shoulder, he reaches and grabs my shoulder as if we're in a church meeting. I don't know this guy from Adam. And I kind of look at this, and I'm like, I start praying, I go into a prophecy. And the prophecy says, you've been picked on for so long. People have picked on you, but it's never really bothered you because there was somebody inside you telling you who your identity is. And you've had armor all around you your whole life, and even though people have picked on you, Mark, somebody's told you everything's going to be okay. Your parents have been distracted. They've been bothered about this picking on stuff. Now here is the good news, the really good news. The reason why you've been protected is because Jesus Christ has been with you, shielding you, protecting you. Mm-hmm. And what's going to happen is the same people that are picking on you, after you make this commitment, will be coming to you for help. And so be ready to help these people. Be ready for the transformation. And the prophecy goes out, and I'm not ad-libbing this. Christ gives me the word. That's how prophecy works. I open my eyes. I'm in the middle of an aisle at Walmart. I open my eyes, and his eyes are this big. And he's looking at me like this. He goes, okay. He turns around, and he's gone, just like that. I got my pesticide here. I'm like, okay, back door. Okay, which pesticide am I supposed to get here? And I look at this, and I don't have any peace about this. I know peace is what... And I'm like, that's it. I'm just going to buy this. I'm not wasting my time. I came all the way to Walmart. I'm not wasting my time. And all of a sudden, I got a word. I said, Aaron, I got something better than that. I'm like, what was the point of coming all the way to Walmart to look for pesticide and not... It was Mark, wasn't it? I set it back over there. And I kneeled down in the middle of the aisle. Some other guys walking by. And I kneeled down. I said, golly, what a privilege. Stephen saw a man in a chariot reading the book of Isaiah out loud. And Stephen had to run to catch up. Do you understand what you're reading? It's a book of Isaiah. It's very confusing. And the eunuch goes, how can I understand? They're talking about this guy. Is this? And he goes, Just stop the chair. Let me explain something. And all of a sudden, Stephen goes, he was the Mashiach, was Christ Jesus. He just died. He was resurrected. And now salvation is here. And the eunuch goes, there's water. Let me be baptized. And he takes him through the water. He gets baptized. And Stephen disappears. Just like that. You guys can be a part of those testimonies too. We're going to turn into Exodus chapter 2. Yeah, we do. Elijah, you can grab one in my office. There's one on the desk underneath a bunch of stuff. So it's so neat about testimonies like that. You know, I don't know if anybody has ever been a part of, I'm assuming most of them have been a part of one of those things. Some of my friends, that's a God thing. Yeah. You can be a part of more of those. Be on call. Don't clock out. Don't turn your cell phone off with your boss. You might work at Boeing and go, okay, I don't talk to the boss until 8 o'clock Monday morning. With Jesus Christ and our Father, go, I'm on call. You send me, I'll go. And guess what will happen? You'll get to be a part of some really amazing things. But here we are in Exodus chapter 2, is page 85 in the Roth Ram.
No,
okay. Be careful of the table because there's a mic. Okay. In Exodus chapter 2, and I'll start off in verse 11. And it came to pass in those days when Moses grew up that he went out unto his brethren and looked on their burdens and saw an Egyptian smiting. The Hebrew word here for smiting, which is really neat because Chuck pointed this out, is the same Hebrew word for murdering or killing. I don't know if he's murdering or killing. So as far as we know, he was killing a Hebrew of his brethren. So he turned his this way and that, and when he saw that there was no man, he smote the Egyptian and hit him in the sand. And he went out the second day, and lo, two Hebrews striving together. So he said to him that did wrong, wherefore should thou smite thy fellow? Anyways, what happens is, verse 15, when Pharaoh finds out what Moses did, would somebody read verse 15, just the very beginning?
So Pharaoh heard this thing and sought to slay Moses. And Moses fled from the face of Pharaoh and dwelt in the land of Midian and sat down by the well.
Why did he flee Pharaoh? To preserve his life. We're supposed to preserve our life. Now I'm going to give a little waiver here. I'm not going to pick on Moses. Where scripture is silent, let us be silent. Yahweh does not pick on Moses directly. He doesn't say Moses messed up here or here like that. But I'm going to point some things out so hopefully we can recognize and we might be able to maybe relate a little bit to Moses here. If we turn to page, the next page, this is going to be Exodus chapter 3. He fled Pharaoh to preserve his life, which is, and I'm very glad he did. And it's a neat thing about the Rothran. It says that the burning bush was not a burning bush, it was a burning thorn bush. And that's the Hebrew, so there's a thorn bush. Isn't that neat? I just thought it was a burning bush. Bush is a bush. No, if Shakespeare wrote a thorn bush, we would not change Shakespeare's stuff, would we? No, we shouldn't change our father. Here's Rothian preserves it. But what we're going to look at here is most of us that are reading this, and if you haven't read this account, pause the movie or whatever, and read this account in Exodus chapter 3. You're going to see transformation of Moses. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to point out Moses' speech. A bush pops up. It's on fire. It says, my name's Yahweh, or it says, I'm the God of your fathers, and I'm sending you to go pick a fight with the most powerful man in the world. You, Moses. And so, verse 4b, and I'm just going to kind of go through kind of quickly. I'm going to point out just what Moses' speech was, because most of all the speech in chapter 3 is almost all Yahweh talking to Moses. In 4a, Moses said, behold me, I'm here. Okay. That's good, right? Yahweh says, Moses, take your shoes off. Or come here. Verse 11, here's another thing Moses said. And Moses said unto Elohim, who am I that I should go unto Pharaoh? It's not belief. It's unbelief. It didn't make sense. I'm an 80-year-old man. You want me to go pick a fight with the most powerful man in the universe? Or not universe, maybe possibly in the world at the time? And Yahweh says, I will be with thee. We're going to do it together. Verse 13, what does Moses say? He says, Moses responds, "What is the name of our God?" The name Yahweh disappeared somewhere during the Egyptian captivity. Yahweh is used all throughout Genesis. Abraham called him Yahweh. Isaac, Jacob called him Yahweh. Everybody called him Yahweh. And then Moses doesn't know Yahweh's name. Why? Because they lived amongst the Egyptians. Now, Moses says, what is his name? Now, we're going to skip over to chapter 4, verse 1. And I'm kind of going through kind of quickly, but and the testimony took up most of the time. Verse 4, "Then Moses responded and said, 'And lo, they won't believe me.'" So in verse 3:11, he says, "Who am I?" Or, "I can't do it. I'm a nobody." Yahweh says, "I'll be with you. It didn't matter who you are." Verse 4:1, Moses says, "They're not going to believe me." 4:10, Moses says unto Yahweh, "Pardon, O my Adonai, not a man of words, am I neither there heretofore, nor since thou hast spoken to thy servant, for heavy of the mouth and heavy of the tongue am I." I can't do it. I can't. Verse 13, he said, "Pardon, O my Lord," or "Pardon, Adonai, send somebody else. Choose somebody else." All of us have been in a position where we're sent to go someplace. And one of the reasons that I believe Moses did not want to go back to Egypt is to preserve his life and maybe the life of the other guys. Moses was a great guy. He was selfless. So I would speculate that he's going, if you send me, a lot of people are going to die. Who am I? They're not going to believe me. And I can't even talk. Unbelief, 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 unbelief. Now we're going to turn to 1 Samuel. 1 Samuel chapter 17. And we're going to come back to Moses. Chapter 17, if somebody would read 1 Samuel chapter 17, 1-7, please.
"And the Philistines gathered together their hosts into battle, and they were gathered together into Succoth, which belonged into Judah, and they encamped between Soka and Azekah in Elphistamin. And what?
Keep going. Keep going. You're doing great.
Saul and the men of Israel gathered themselves together and encamped in the vale of Elah, and sent the army in array against the Philistines. And the Philistines were standing near the hill on one side, and the Israelites were standing near the hill on the other side, while the valley was between them. And there came forth a champion out of the camp of the Philistines, Goliath, his name from Gath, his height 6 cubits, and a span, with a helmet of bronze on his head, and with a scaly coat of mail was he clad. The weight of the coat being 5,000 shekels of bronze, and greaves of bronze on his feet, and a javelin of bronze between his shoulders, and he shaft his spear, and the shaft of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and the flashing head of his spear was 600 shekels of iron, and his shield barrier was coming on before him." I keep reading.
No, that's good right there. Thank you. Very good job. Okay. What's really neat in chapter 17, verse 1, I never noticed this. It said that the Philistines gathered together their hosts and were gathered together unto Succoth, which belongeth unto who?
Judah.
Who picked this fight?
They did.
the Philistines did. I never knew that. Here's some other interesting things in verse 4. There came forth a champion. The Hebrew word for champion is Ish-haben-nachim. So Ish-haben-nachim. This word champion means the man between the hosts or the duelist. What's this guy like? You ever heard of Doc Holliday? Draw, quick. What's his job? He settles things. He settles disputes. And so here's the champion. Who's the duelist? Goliath. Goliath means soothsayer. So he's like a prophet. Okay? So he's got, he might be demonized, and he can read tarot cards and stuff about the past. He can't tell the future. Actually, he can't tell the future. Only our Father can do that. But here's some real interesting things about this champion. His head, excuse me, his name was from Gath, his height 6 cubits and a span. So, okay, so the camera, if you can follow me, you guys might have to duck for a second, or you might have to tilt it up. Okay, you got me?
Yeah.
All right. If you can see that piece of blue tape up there, and you see me, I'm 5'9". I don't know if you can you get both of us on the camera at the same time? That's how tall Goliath was.
Oh my gosh.
I am 5'9". David, according to E.W. Bollinger, was probably 15 or 16 years old, probably about my height. How big is this guy?
Twice his height.
How big is his head? That's the guy. Okay? Now, we know he's a duelist. We know he's a duelist. Not only is he a duelist, he's 10.5 feet tall. 10'6". Okay. That's a pretty impressive resume. The helmet of bronze on his head, and with a scaly coat of mail, which he clad, the weight of the coat being 5,000 shekels of bronze. So what? His jacket weighed 125 pounds. Well, my brother and I are at the gym, and we manifest that we can do all things through Christ Jesus. We walk up to the heaviest dumbbells there are, who nobody touches. Guess how much they weigh? 125 pounds. These dumbbells, probably the majority of the people in the whole gym can't even pick them up. It's solid, heavy weight. And we pick it up, we do it 10 times. And then we set them down on the gym floor, the whole thing trimmed. In fact, right underneath where the dumbbells are is the kids' daycare. People come and complain all the time because we're setting down Goliath's coat. 125-pound jacket. He wears it. When you go in the war, when people go in the war, they take off encumbrance things. In fact, it says strip off every encumbrance and run your race in a way in which to win. Goliath's getting ready to fight, so this is probably his lightweight jacket. This is not his winter coat. 125 pounds. How strong is this guy? 10.5 feet tall. He's the duelist. He's most likely demonized. He represents a god. The god called Dagon. And the god Dagon, because this is one of the gods of the Philistines, this is a fight between Yahweh and Dagon, between the Philistines. When they steal the Ark of the Covenant, they take it and they put it in front of their god. It's called a fish god. Mm-hmm. In front of Dagon. And they go, ha! Dagon has beat Yahweh, the god of the Hebrews. Ha 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 ha! And the next day they come out, and guess what happened? Dagon's bowing in front of the Ark of the Covenant. They go,
fell down.
Hey, somebody knocked down Dagon. Dagon, are you okay? Put him back up. Oh, our God, you will protect us. This box. This is just a box. This is where they get their power from? The next day they come back out. Guess what? Dagon's hands have been removed. Hands, in the biblical, the way our Father used it, show power and authority. He's impotent. His hands are busted off. I think his head's busted off too. And guess what he's doing? He's bowing in front of Yahweh again. Now here's another fight. This is another fight after the judges between Dagon. Who is Dagon, anybody?
Nobody.
It's our adversary. These false gods, they got names or whatever. We go, yeah, there's a war. Ephesians 6 says there's a whole war going on. So he's a soothsayer. He can probably read tarot cards. Where is he getting his power? It's not Dagon. The adversary doesn't want it. But anyways, let me see here. Verse 7, it says the shaft of his spear weighs 15 pounds. 15 pounds. If the head of the spear is 15 pounds, how heavy does the rest of the shaft have to be just to make it balanced? How long is this thing? He's 10.5 feet tall. Is this a 15-foot spear? Is it a 20-foot spear? I don't know. But whatever it is that it's probably 50 or 60-pound spear just to balance the weight so you could use this. How strong is Goliath? Okay, he's pretty big. Now, here's what's really neat about all this. Moses was in the wilderness how many years?
40.
40 is the word that, or the number that, that Yahweh writes to use about probation. It's probationary times. The Israelites wandered in the desert 40 years. They're on probation. And here's Moses, 40, he was a shepherd for 40 years, and then he goes back. After 40 days in verse 16, guess who shows up?
David.
Yahweh's anointed, David. And we're going to skip over to, so now we're going to kind of speed things up a little bit. We're going to go up to chapter 17, verse 25. Would somebody read chapter 17, verse 25?
And the men of Israel said, "Have ye seen this man that is coming up? For to reproach Israel is he coming. So then it shall be that the man that shall smite him, the same will the king enrich with great riches, and his own daughter will give him, and his father's house will he make free in Israel."
Verse 26b, this is what's really neat. I just explained how big he is. And if I was successful, hopefully that made you feel a little bit intimidated. Because that was the whole point, showing how strong Goliath was. What does David do? 26b, "For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he hath reproached the ranks of the living Elohim?" Mm-hmm. I don't care how big he is. He's going to take on Yahweh? That's a joke. That's a joke, right? Okay. It's kind of neat because today, before the teaching, Isaiah Strong brought his action figure. This is Goliath. He's a little bull-legged. I think he must be riding a really big horse. But here's Goliath. And so I thought it was really neat. I think this is confirmation. Our Father gives us confirmation we're going the right directions. But this is a teaching. Obviously, some of us are facing some mountains and some Goliaths that are in front of us. And Moses did not want to go back for probably the preservation of life, either his family, and Israel. Israel also. But here's David, which is a neat thing. Oh, he's a young kid, though. He's 15 years old. He doesn't have a mortgage. It's okay for him to talk like that. He hasn't learned any lessons yet, right? Now, would somebody... now, we're going to skip on to... David starts saying, "Who is this guy? I'll get him." The king calls for him. And the verse, if somebody would read verse 34 through 37.
"Then said David unto Saul, Thy servant used to tend his father's sheep, and there would come a lion or a bear and carry off a lamb out of the flock. And I would go after him and smite him and rescue it out of his mouth. And if he rose against me, I would catch him by his beard and smite him and slay him. Thy servant could slay either a lion or a bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall become as one of them, for he hath reproached the ranks of a living Elohim. And David said, Yahweh, who hath rescued me out of the power of the lion and out of the power of the bear, he will rescue us out of the hand of this Philistine."
Amen. Then, and then after he says all that, who does he say killed the lion and the bear?
Yahweh.
Yahweh did. It was Yahweh killed him. That was a lion and a bear. The lion and the bear weren't just spitting on Yahweh. The lion and the bear weren't trying to put unbelief in Israel. This guy is really taking off the boss. And if Yahweh can deliver the lion and the bear, who are not being like Goliath, then this is no problem. What's really neat about this is if he can span up to the wall up there, our camera guy, that is a white-tailed buck. And what you don't know about me, what you don't know about me is I am not a good shot and I'm not a good hunter. I got this deer because of Yahweh through Jesus Christ. Faith. That's it. Right? And if you ask anybody that goes shooting with me, they go, "How do you get anything?" This is a testimony that Yahweh's word is true and it works. So my two deer that I've used Yahweh's word and faith to get them, I got them mounted. Why? because I want the testimony to keep breathing and to give other people hope to go, how did he get this deer? Because if I was going to fight this deer, if any one of you watching, anybody in this room chose to fight this deer, you would die. If you tried to tie a rope around this animal, it would come and stomp you to death. If you got into a ring with this animal, you're going to die, specifically if it's rut. A human cannot take on a buck like this. Nobody can. There's actually an NRA magazine where a 6'4" guy was, he thought a buck was dead and was laying in a stream, so he walked up to it. The buck jumped up, almost killed him, started beating him to the snots and started drowning him underwater. And that was a dying buck. So here's a buck, that's where I got this. And so David goes, I got a lion on the wall, and I got a bear on the wall. There's one type of personality, they find out that there's big grizzly bears in Alaska. 10.5 feet tall, claws this long. They can chase down a horse, and they like to eat meat. And guess what? Humans are nice and soft. We've got all this jiggly on us. It's like ribeye, and we can't run. And so a lot of people go, I'll never go wherever the grizzly bears are. Then there's another guy, guess what they do? They pay $15,000 to get close to one of these guys. $20,000, so they go, I want that grizzly bear. Why? He's going to go on my wall. Why would you want to meet a grizzly bear? Well, you obviously have not seen my 300 short man. You haven't seen me shoot. I know a little something that they don't know. David goes to Saul, and he goes, I got a lion on the wall. I got a bear on the wall. I've always wanted a Philistine. I've never seen one with a rack this big. This guy's huge. In fact, I don't even know where I'm going to mount him. Might freak out the taxidermist, but this is going to be great. So here it is. A lion's on the wall. Bear's on the wall. And David goes, who is this guy? Is David intimidated? No. Because who was the fight with? Yahweh. Why is David going to go fight Goliath? Because Yahweh sent him. We don't go looking for fights. We don't go into harm's way because we're looking for excitement. You're going to die. That's just foolish. But if Yahweh sends you, guess what's going to happen? David did. You can see what happened in chapter 17, verse 54. I know this is gross to a lot of people. Oh, we'll go back up to verse 49. The very end of verse 49. After when David threw the stone inside of the Philistines on one mountain, David's on another mountain. They would have ran down. David throws a rock, and the Philistine, even though he gets hit in the head, he falls down and he bows before Yahweh. Where does Yahweh live during this fight? Where is Yahweh living? Inside of the temple, his anointed. Dawid is how you would say his name. And now he bowed before David. And Yahweh goes, and then what does David do? He cuts his head off. Verse 54. And David took the head of the Philistine and brought it to Jerusalem. Why? Why did David do that? The same reason why I mounted my deer, to say, look, you're going to be going up against odds that don't make sense. How many people would not believe a 15 or 16 year old boy just killed a 10.5 foot duelist? This guy might be as strong as an elephant. Who's going to believe that? Nobody's going to believe this. You can imagine people around David going, nobody's going to believe this. When David goes, I'm going to solve that. I'm going to I'll go give my testimony. What do you think you were going to do when you walk around the head this big? Oh, that's disgusting. No, it's a testimony. This is what happens to the adversaries of Yahweh. If you're obedient, he'll be your shield like he promised Abraham. He's probably witnessing to everybody. It doesn't matter where you go. Just be obedient, and he does the fighting for you, and then you get to be like David. We look at David and go, man, he killed a lion, he killed a bear, he killed Goliath. Can you imagine how excited David was? David would have been excited because he got to be the hands and feet of Yahweh at one point, to deliver Yisrael. These guys were intruders anyways on the land. Here goes David. And what happened when they came to David? His brother says, what are you doing here? David confronted unbelief with his mouth. Faith. Faith. And so you're going to get scared. People are going to come to you with stuff that's going to scare the heck out of you. You're not going to want to proceed. And what do you have to do? You have to counter. Faith comes by hearing, so does unbelief. Now, what's real important, if you go to the website, under new papers, here's a whole article. Faith unleashes power. And guess what Yahweh and Jesus Christ does? What do they do with you? They put you in a position where you require this. And you look at the obstacle and you're going, I can't move that. This cannot be Yahweh's will. This can't be God's will. You can't put me in a position. I'm not strong enough. They go, exactly. Need some help? faith unleashes power. Without faith, it is impossible to be well-pleasing. And if you're an obedient Christian, then you're going to be put in positions that you're going to go, how am I going to kill a giant? How am I going to move a mountain? Faith unleashes power. What did David do? When he opened his mouth and he spoke, he released power. There's a phrase that I love, but we used to use it with football. And somebody would be running their mouth or something, go, the next play, I'm going to open up a can. And you say, I'm going to open up a can. David opened up a can of faith on Goliath. And what did that do? It opened up a can of faith for everybody else. And they went and they routed the Philistines. And that's what Yahweh needs. He needs leaders that just go, quit looking at what everybody else says. You're crying out loud. Have you forgot who's with you? If Yahweh's for you, who can stand against you? Who can fight Yahweh and win? Yahweh. Right? So we look at David and Goliath and we go, okay, so should we go be picking fights with some of these things? Or should we be going into harm's way possibly? Should we? No, you're not. You should go where you're told to go. And if he tells you to be a housewife and raise your kids and never leave the city you live in, then do it. And guess what? That's where you're going to have all your satisfaction. But if he tells you to start giving financially and you don't have enough money, oh my goodness, I can't do that. Exactly. Of course you can. You just be obedient. That's all of our job, is to be obedient. Jesus Christ said, be following me. Well, what about these guys? You missed it. Follow me. What about these guys? Follow me. Take up the cross and bear it. And so faith unleashes power. There's another great, other great teachings on there. Because how did David move his mountain? His mountain was Goliath. What was going to happen if David didn't do something? Okay, let's just think about this. How many brothers does David have? 7. They're going to die. Most likely they're going to be put in slavery. What's going to happen to, we know how David felt about Saul or Shaul, Yahweh's anointed. What's going to happen? If somebody doesn't believe Yahweh, other people are going to die. And I believe this might have been why Moses did not want to go back to Israel. It's probably because other people are going to die. You got the wrong guy, man. If Moses would have been, I really appreciate talking to you. It's nice to know your name's Yahweh. I've always wondered about that. Everybody else has got a name for their Elohim. But you got the wrong address. People are going to be hurt if you send me. And guess what he's going to do with you? That was Moses. He's going to send you someplace and you go, now what we're going to do is turn to 2 Samuel. How did David move his mountain? He opened his mouth. And what's neat with the account with David is we don't see a whole lot of unbelief there, do we? If you keep reading, you'll see some other areas of his life that needed an improvement. He messed up. He wasn't Jesus Christ. But in 2 Samuel chapter 5, so, like before this whole teaching, Isaiah brought. He brought. Here, let me get it right here. Here's a cool guy. He brought Goliath. Look how big this guy is. He looks pretty intimidating. And then we got Skylanders giants here, right? And we just be looking and go, we could ask a 3-year-old, who's going to win this fight? Who's going to win this fight? You can ask a 2-year-old, who's going to win this? I tell you what, if you don't believe me, you get a doll this big and a doll this big, and you get the 2-year-old this one, and you pick this one, guess what the 2-year-old's going to do? Yeah, there you go. So here we go. Place your bets, place your bets, place your bets. Well, what did David do? He was, hey, Goliath.
What's that?
There's somebody behind you.
I don't see nobody.
That's because he's invisible. You can imagine, David looking right here, and I'm going, I got you, man. Just start running. Just start running. And here's Yahweh behind us. Knocked him right down. How big is Yahweh compared to your mountain? How big is he? I mean, this is kid stuff, right? This is kind of silly. No, it's not. It's about faith. And but we'll turn to 2 Samuel chapter 5. Would somebody read verse 19?
So then David inquired of Yahweh, saying, shall I go up against the Philistines? Wilt thou deliver them into my hand? And Yahweh said unto David, go up.
Okay. First illustration. How do we know David won a lot of battles? How did he win? He had insider information. Am I going to win? Yahweh, is this you telling me to go? Yahweh said, go. Okay. Because once David got confirmation, he goes, the fight's not with me anyways. And who can win against Yahweh? And David won. Now look down at verse 23. And David inquired of Yahweh and said, thou shalt not go up. Yahweh said, don't go this time. There was another time he goes, don't go. Oh, well, okay. Obviously he goes, don't go this way. And then he says, I want you to come around the backside, and when you hear marching against the mulberry trees, then you're going to go. Okay. So the point of this is that he's going to send you. And if you got something stirring in your heart and you're looking at a Goliath, you're looking at a mountain, you're going to go, I don't know if this is him. Go inquire. Now, Colossians 3:15 says, let the peace of Christ act as umpire in your heart. If you're a baseball player, it doesn't matter what your coach says. It doesn't matter what your catcher says. It doesn't matter what your friends say, your fam say. It doesn't matter what the batter says. Only what the umpire says. If you're a batter, bottom line is what the umpire says. And guess what? Everybody goes, he called a strike. He might be an idiot, but he called a strike. And that people say stuff like that, right? The umpire is the final say. So when you go before him, you go, shall I go? Sudden fear, panic, dread is not our inheritance. So if you get sudden fear, panic, and dread, it's junk mail. Just spam it. Don't open it. Don't open it. La, 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 la. Faith comes by hearing. That's not from my Father. But if he gives you the desire of your heart to go, it's okay. Go. Desire your heart still go. Then it's okay. That means he's going to fight. Who can fight against Yahweh? But then when he says, don't go, it would have been peaceful. He would have been, come around this way. Follow me this way. And that's what Yahweh was saying. But he did it with Moses. We'll do it together. And so here's Yahweh going, David, I'm glad you met with me. We're going to come around the backside. Let's get these guys. And David goes, let's do it. And look, many times that David was by himself. When he runs from Saul, he was never alone. Never alone. Except for maybe with Bathsheba. And he remembered that. He goes, I got the creator of the universe with me. Golly. So Colossians 3:15, peace. 1 Corinthians 14, it says he's not an Elohim of confusion, but of peace. Now turn back to Exodus chapter 4. Then we're going to go back to Moses, which is really neat about this, because Moses had a son. He had a wife. He's 80 years old. And here he is, and he gets called. And here it is. You go, okay, you want me to go to the most powerful man in the universe? What's your name? He's got lots of gods. He's got a frog god, a Nile god, a river god. Your name's Yahweh. That sounds kind of weird. It was kind of funny because Moses goes, I've never even heard of Yahweh. I'm not letting you go. Yeah, Moses didn't hear Yahweh's name either. I bet you know, a lot of Christians have never heard it either. Don't feel bad. Neither did Moses. There's been a lot of captivities. And right now, I feel like we're in an American captivity. Anyways, now we're going to go back to Moses. How do you unleash, open your can? How do you open the can? Because once you get confirmation you were to go, what do you need to do? Open a can. This is between this adversary and Yahweh. And who can fight against Yahweh and win? And what's neat about after Moses, after the rout of the Egyptians, they flee and they go, Yahweh fights for them. Yet they remember that name then. Mm-hmm. Who can fight against Yahweh? This is not some sort of little frog god or Nile god. It's Goliath was probably did tarot cards. But this is Yahweh. And so what's neat is, after all these signs, for the most part, Moses had like neutral language, maybe not, or unbelief is what it appeared, until we get here. After verse 17 was all the signs, we get to verse 18. So Moses went and returned unto Jethro, his father-in-law, and said unto him, let me go. Moses unleashed faith. Moses unleashed power. Moses opened up a cannon. And look what it was. We're going to come right back there. If you go back, well, we already read it, but in chapter 2, verse 15, Yahweh never said that skip down to verse 19. Then Yahweh, after he says, let me go to his father-in-law, after he walked out in faith, remember I said a word of knowledge comes, and I want a word of wisdom. Give me an explanation. Not until you're obedient with the first part. You pass English 1, we'll let you get to English 2. You want to know why? Obey the first part. A lot of Christians, we get one part, we don't obey, we don't get the second part. Moses obeys the first part. Let me go. What's on the line here? His wife could die. His son can die. He can die. Israel could die. It can make the whole situation worse, right? That's what's on the line. Verse 19, then Yahweh sent unto Moses and Midian, go, return to Egypt, for all the men are dead who are seeking thy life. Do you find that unusual that Yahweh did not say that the people that his wanted poster had been removed? Oh, by the way, there's not a wanted poster with Moses anymore. Wanted, dead, preferably dead. It's gone. Oh, that's good to know. A lot of times he's looking at you and he says, without faith it is impossible to be well-pleased. Romans 8:8 says the same thing. And I just quoted Hebrews 11:6. He's putting you in a position where you are to produce faith. Open up a can. It happens with your mouth. Faith comes by hearing the spoken words of Christ. Who are you? And here's David. He goes, who is this uncircumcised Philistine? He's going to fight the creator of the universe, Yahweh? Good luck. I know where I'm going to put my money. And then Yahweh goes, hey, David, how would you like to be the guy that whoops him? Are you serious? I would love to. I got a lion and a bear. Now I'm going to do this. And so what's going to happen is open up your faith. Open up your mouth. Unleash your faith and your power. After you get confirmation, and then you got peace. Because whatever mountains that is in front of you, Mark 11:23 says, speak to it. Moses spoke to that mountain, didn't he? David spoke to the mountain. Now you just speak to the mountain after you get confirmation. A wise man seeks counsel. So go to a believer who can prophesy or contact one of us and don't even tell us what the issue is. And we'll pray and our Father can communicate it to you. And he will confirm it right in your heart. Peace, peace, peace. And then the next step is you go, a wise man seeks counsel. I wanted a direction in this one area. I got peace on it, but here's what I'm planning on doing. And then they go, I think it's okay. Okay, well, good. And then you go back to your Father and go, okay, I'm going to war. Strapping it up. I'm going to go get up. It's okay for me to mount Goliath? Sweet. It's a big hit on my wall. And then David had a buck, a lion, a bear, and Goliath on the wall. And everybody who saw it got to feed off that faith. So open up your mouth. Open it up. Speak. Counter unbelief with your mouth. And so once you get confirmation, you were to go, you say, victory is inevitable. And you know what? I don't have to worry about the consequences. Because somebody else is going to, he already signed a waiver. He said, Yahweh and Jesus Christ signed a liability waiver. They will assume 100% liability for all the consequences. Then you just go and have some fun. I'll go ahead and give a prophecy after I give a prayer. We thank Heavenly Father for Yahweh for these words. We thank you for everybody tuning in. We thank you for my parents' ministry who's filming and financing all of this with Telios Ministries. And we thank you for encouraging believers who are watching these things, that some of the things sound so unusual that as they go, could this be true, that they contact and say, what do they got to lose? And my email is onfireforchrist@outlook.com, or contact us through Telios. We just thank you for helping these people in the race to move the mountains that are in front of them so they can stick their mountains on the wall and hang them up too. My children, be of good courage and know that I call you in a direction that you're going to require me. What I want from you is a relationship. And I'm not going to call you in a direction where you don't need your dad. I want you to do things like sports and stuff where you need your dad in them. And I'm calling you in a direction where you need me every day. And in fact, I would like even more of your time every single day. The question is, do you want to spend time with me? The future that I have for you not only will deliver you and give you an abundance of overflowing joy and satisfaction, but it will overflow to all those that are around you. Just as the Gibeonites inherited wonderful blessings because of Israel, so will the people that are around you. The people that you're worried about, that you're afraid of abandoning, if you follow me, the way to take care of them is follow me through Jesus Christ. And as you do so, I'll take care of all these things.